Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Race, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 26, Call to Arms, teleplay by Iris Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf, and directed by Alan Croker. Call to Arms aired on June 16th, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Sisko attempts to prevent more Dominion ships from entering the Alpha Quadrant by deploying mines in the wormhole. Gul Dukat responds by launching a massive assault fleet against the station.
Nice.
I think it is safe to say the Cold War with the Dominion is now hot.
Yes, we are very hot and at war. Is this the first...
H-O-T-T... O-W-A-R-go? I don't know.
Is this the first time that Star Trek is at war? Like, in release order?
That we've seen currently? Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, obviously, Discovery hasn't happened yet. And while that takes place before this, yeah.
There was this kind of... I mean, there's reference to, like...
Yeah, I meant, like, the next on gen screen.
Era. The Carnet, yeah, yeah. There was the almost war with the Klingons in the original series that led to, like, the Treaty of Organia and finding out the Organians are, like, super beings, and that was, like, a countdown to, like, you know, to the start of war, but then it never actually started.
Yeah.
So I think that's the closest.
Cool. Yeah, it was a pretty epic season finale.
Sorry, now I'm just thinking, like, do you count, like, the first Borg incursion, like, best of both worlds?
That is a very good question.
You don't really see it in the same way.
I mean, I think that this, because Enterprise D is an exploration ship, I feel like they're not at war for very long. Like, that's like a battle for sure, but I feel like our main characters are just like at war now in Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
This episode...
Sorry, I was quitting Jurassic Park.
This episode really changes the dynamic of the show. I mean, the station's no longer ours. I say ours because obviously we're part of the crew. And some of our friends are separated by the end of this episode. There were a lot of major goodbyes between characters because people didn't know when they were going to see each other next.
We've talked before how Deep Space Nine, and I think quite correctly, chose to do the season finales not as, like, direct cliffhangers like Next Generation did, where they would kind of, oh, well, shit, we've written ourselves into a corner that we now have to solve. It's more like, this is going to set up ideas and possibilities and, like, where we're going for the next season, and... I think you are 100% correct, Elise, where it's this finale indicates that going into season six, things will be very, very, very different.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited about it. I just think it's funny because it just makes me happy that Star Trek could be so many different things. Like, it doesn't always have to be exploration all the time. There could be problems with other species and such. And I just feel like revved up, like, personally, with where the show is right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that about Star Trek being different things to different people, and it doesn't have to, like, just be one thing. Like, kind of reminds me of... At the time of this recording, it was, I think, a week ago or 2 weeks ago it came out, but when this release, it'll be still available, but much longer ago, was a guest host on the Trekcast podcast for their basically, what do they call it, Star Trek status alert. It's basically like the State of the Union of Star Trek and where it's at and things like that, and... It was also, like, a first for me because they're a video podcast as well. So, like, obviously you can download it wherever you get your podcasts, but you can also, like, if you wonder what I look like and how much I can't sit still when I podcast, you can check that out on YouTube.
Speaking of which, I'm sitting extremely bisexually right now. Like, I just cannot sit still either.
So that's why we don't video record these podcasts.
Is that the only reason? Time we're moving. Besides the fact that we're not of interest. I've never had any interest in that.
That's true. I also had to, like, get up relatively early for Mountain Time and be presentable to be on camera, whereas, like,
yeah,
I've done this podcast in my pajamas before.
Yeah.
Anyways, we talked about, you know, the variety of Star Trek not inherently being a bad thing, but it's just kind of adjusting your perspective that it's, like, not everything has to be for you, and that's okay.
Yes.
Right?
I agree. So. I also want to talk about how this was Robert Hewitt Wolff's last script as a staff writer for the show. He left the show after this season, and a lot of, you know, as we've noted, he and Ira Stephen Bear were writing partners. So if one of them wrote an episode, it was usually written by both of them. He does come back in season seven and as a freelancer and wrote a script. I forgot to write which episode that was. But, yeah, he was a big part of the show, and this is his last episode writing. I want to get into a little bit on the special effects in this episode. Not necessarily how they did them, but, like, different, a lot of the special effects were reused from previous things. So, this is the second battle of Deep Space Nine that we've seen on the show, and obviously the start of the Dominion War. Some of the footage during the battle was reused from The Way of the Warrior and Emissary. So, like, they even used footage from the first episode, as well as Voyager's Caretaker, where they would just change, like, different ships in the background and stuff. Also, some of the shots of the Defiant being attacked by the Jem'Hadar were reused from the episode The Search Part 1. The way the final battle was filmed was not exactly how Ira Stephen Bear had envisioned it. So I have, like, a quote from him because I found this to be really interesting. What we'd written for that scene was lots of ships, two little ships coming to join them. But what the effects people shot was lots of ships, two little ships coming in, turning around and joining them. So basically, like, the two, you know, the Rotaran and the Defiant, like, not only just joining the fleet, but, like, turning around and facing the Dominion is what he's talking about. It told the audience, it went much further than what we wanted. It told the audience that we were attacking now, like, okay, we're marshaling our forces and here we are to join up. Which wasn't the plan. So they actually had to rewrite the opening for season six because of the way this shot was filmed at the end of the episode. Because I guess Renee Echeverria was like, guys, this doesn't work because the effects people have made the audience think something a lot bigger has happened. Like the fact that the Defiant and the Rotaran are now, like, kind of on the offense as opposed to the defense. We have to address that. So they ended up changing the beginning of season six and basically making the ships look a little bit more ratty at the beginning of the next season. And also, the final battle scene was actually one of the last physical, like, studio models that are used in the show. So a lot of, in the future, I think the last one is A Time to Stand, which is the next episode, I believe. And after that, they kind of switched more to CGI for their ships and special effects.
Part of the transition to CGI was their ability to reuse some of the digital models that had been created, like, the year before for First Contact.
Yeah.
Right? So when you look at that effects with the massive fleet, you see, like, a bunch of ships you hadn't seen since First Contact and had only seen in First Contact, like the Akira, and I don't remember if the Sable's in there or not too, but there are a couple of classes of ship that were created for First Contact that DS9 doesn't end up using later or you don't see in later movies, because I don't quite remember the particulars, but I don't know if a hard drive got corrupted or something got accidentally deleted, but they lost those digital models for those ships.
Oh, and I also read This is really funny. Apparently two of the ships at the end, like, I didn't notice this, but I was reading. Apparently two of the ships at the end, both accidentally, because of a production issue, said NCC-1701-D underneath the, on the ships.
Yeah.
Which I found to be very funny. Like, oops. And they're, like, not the same class as the Enterprise D, so it's just very funny. Whoopsie. Yeah, I find that stuff really interesting. I don't... When this battle felt like a lot of ships on screen, so it was actually a little hard for me to focus on one thing or another specifically. Guess what?
Monkey butt.
No. Ram and Lita get married in this episode. I'm so glad that we have something nice. I was really amused at the start of the episode with the whole, like, wedding dress conversation, because they're going through, like, the ones that they didn't like any of them. But I love, like, Zial is in the conversation because she's, you know, besties with Garrick, and Garrick's the tailor. So it's, like, the four of them, Ram, Lita, Zial, and Garrick. And they're, like, naming, like, oh, I hated number 62. And, like, the idea of remembering what number 62 is very funny to me. I don't remember if that was the number, but just, like, if you've seen over 60 dresses, like, knowing which one is which number is banana pants.
And the one we see the picture of, where it's, like, basically, like, a loincloth and two other pieces of fabric. It's, like, Rhysian traditional, yes, or something, yeah, like that. It's, like, oh, man. Zagel's, like, Garrick's hype man, being like, well, just get Garrick to design it. You know, whatever he'll come up with will be gorgeous. Blah, 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 blah.
I love it.
And you have kind of Quark in the background being all judgy about it not being a traditional, like,
Ferengi,
you know,
yeah,
Ferengi relationship and wedding and whatever. So I think, honestly, the solution to the wedding dress problem was everyone, they should just have a Betazoid style wedding where the couple and all the guests are just nude.
Yeah.
Right? If Quark's so concerned about women wearing clothes, just have a Betazoid wedding and no one wears clothes.
Is that appropriation?
I mean,
I'm just joking.
They were considering a Rhysian traditional wedding, so, you know.
I know. Well, who knows? I'm kidding, but, like, the start of their relationship really did feel like it was on Rise Up, because that's where Lita and Julian have their, like, breakup sex weekend. So
their conscious uncoupling?
Yeah, so that she can go be with Ram. I do like that Ram and Lita are, like, nervous to ask Sisko to officiate. I watched this and with my roommates, and Tessa was like, Sisko is captain. Marrying people is part of his job. Like, don't be nervous to ask him. And plus, he's the emissary.
They weren't asking Captain Sisko. They were asking the emissary.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right?
Yeah. They end up having... Because originally, the plan was for them, their wedding to be, like, in 2 weeks, which is kind of funny, because, like, Garrick just whipping up a dress in 2 weeks seems insane. I'm not a tailor, but I can imagine. But, yeah, so they end up having to get married sooner rather than later, because all the... By the end of the episode, all the Bajorans must leave Deep Space Nine. And so Sisko marries them, and then immediately Ram is like, you have to leave for your safety. And it's really sad. I know he's doing this because he loves her and because he wants her to be safe. But, like, I hate when they're not together.
During that whole scene, you must remember this. It's, like, playing.
Yes. Sure. I mean, he basically is, like, it's doing his best Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah.
I loved it so much.
So Casablanca.
Yes.
That's two classic film references in consecutive episodes. We had Lions and Geigers and Bears.
Oh, yeah.
Now we have Casablanca's aspersions.
I love it. I did, like, later in the episode, Quark's conversation with Ram. He's, like, confused why Ram is on the station working instead of back on Bajor with Lita. And, like, similarly, Ram is like, why are you still on the station? And Quark's like, I'm looking out for my bar. And Ram's like, well, I'm looking out for you. It's, like, really sweet. But, yeah, he's like, this is where my job is. Like, and I get that completely.
And then he also very loudly declares himself a spy.
I know.
You're the worst spy ever, Ram. Like,
he basically pretends that he like goes back to work for his brother, but he's spying for Starfleet. So I'm excited to see where that goes. Next we have journalist Jake, which I thought was really interesting. Sisko finds out after the fact, through seeing a published article, that Jake is now writing for the Federation News Service. And I find this to be a huge conflict of interest. Not Jake being a journalist, but Jake having this Deep Space Nine and the impending Dominion threat as his beat because of his dad's role at Deep Space Nine.
I guess they've decided to, excuse me, make Jake basically like be the Hemingway of the Dominion War.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, he's supposed to give a first-hand account of the battle, but he's in sick bay with Julian because Sisko won't let him stay in ops. So it reminded me of that episode where Jake and Julian kind of like get separated when they're on that planet that's like at war.
Yeah, Northern Battle to the Strong. Yes. Yeah, that was a nice kind of callback. And I even think like they kind of in a roundabout way reference it.
Yeah.
Where I can't remember what Julian says, but like Jake's like, no, I understand. I'm like ready for it this time sort of thing.
I do appreciate that. So Bashir's like, my name is with an I. Like, spell it correctly. At the end of the episode, yeah, Jake stays on Deep Space Nine to report on what's happening, and he thinks because his dad is the emissary that the Dominion won't hurt him because they don't want to risk, like, offending the Bajorans, basically. We'll see how that plays out as well.
I really liked how Avery Brooks played the reveal after they've evacuated the station. He's on the Defiant and realizes that.
Oh, yeah. I had that in the notes later, but we could talk about it now if you want to. Yeah, he just says, you know, we can't go. He's pissed, obviously, but he's like, we can't go back to get him. We can't risk the entire crew of the Defiant for one person, even if he is my son. And I think that's correct. I don't think that you can do that. So I agree.
And even how they shot the reveal that Jake is in Quarks with that scene with Rom, and it just, the camera like is tracking Rom, and then it like spins around and you see Jake just chilling in that alcove. Yep. It's like, oh my god.
Whoops. Well, Jake's an adult now and he makes his own choices. The main plot of the episode, which Matt described in the summary earlier, involves the Dominion threat. So basically, the fifth convoy of Dominion ships comes out of the wormhole, and everyone, especially O'Brien, is getting pretty antsy. They're like, can they just attack us already so we can get this over with? I get this feeling so much. Like, the tension of waiting for it to happen must be so unbearable.
Yeah.
Nog actually hears some gossip that he tells Sisko of the Romulans apparently signed a non-aggression pact with the Dominion, and Sisko doesn't believe it at first, and he calls Starfleet and learns some other planets have done the same, and Bajor has been offered the same non-aggression pact. And it's really interesting how the episode, how this changes over the episode. Like, Kira's convinced that they'll never sign it and that they shouldn't and all of that. And obviously by the end of the episode, things change completely with regard to that. I do think it's interesting, this whole, like, we're going to put a minefield in the wormhole so that no more Dominion ships can enter. But, like, we're not going to give you more people to take care of this. You're on your own. You have to get it done with just the Defiant. It feels like you're like kind of just, the Starfleet's basically setting them up for failure almost, and they almost don't get it done in time because of this.
Yeah, it's like, I think they were probably hoping that it like would stay under wraps a little bit longer before, like, you know, Wayun and all those guys show up.
Yeah, because they find out about the mines like almost immediately and just pop up and are like, hey, fuck you, remove these mines or we're gonna take over Deep Space Nine.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you can go.
No, I was gonna say, the scene where Jadzia, Miles, and Rom are like talking about how to mine the wormhole, and comes up with the idea of this self-replicating swarm mines that Rom comes up with. They were trying to invoke a little bit of the Manhattan Project in that scene.
Interesting.
Yeah, which I don't know if I Like, I get it when you mention it, but I don't know if I would have noticed that otherwise. But what I did notice about that scene was, again, Rom being a great neurodivergent king and, like, both being present in the conversation and not present in the conversation, and then over that coming up with this, like, genius idea about the self-replicating minds. It just, I don't know. Rom was my favorite in that scene.
Rom is my favorite.
He's talking about the wedding.
Yeah.
And then he's talking about the mines and then back and forth. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah.
Rom's one of my favorites in this whole episode, honestly. I do also like how Sisko uses Martok and the Rotaran in this episode. Like, the Klingons are our allies again, as has been established during this whole season. So he sends them to the Cardassian border to kind of, like, let everyone know when the Dominion fleet arrives. Because his vessel is probably a lot more capable of protecting itself than some of the other vessels. eventually, Sisko, as I was mentioning earlier, gets Kira to, like, get all the Bajoran ministers together. And as the emissary, he's going to tell them, like, I really think you should sign this non-aggression pact. And the Bajorans do listen to him, and they all are instructed to leave Deep Space Nine immediately for their own safety. I did also note that Keiko and Molly and the baby are back on Earth because for their safety as well. I love the idea that every single Star Trek has, like, a self-destruct button, basically. And in this episode, we get, it's not a self-destruct, but it's, like, a sabotage situation. We have a, Sisko has a,
sabotage.
Yeah, Sisko, I kind of, ruined my own joke there, actually. Sisko prepares for, it's called Program Sisko 197, which is like, listen all y'all, it's a sabotage, of all the major systems on Deep Space Nine. Martok does find that the Dominion's coming, but when he's trying to warn everybody, the Dominion, like, cuts into the feed, and Dukat and Weyoun and Damar are there, and they're just like, please surrender, blah, blah, blah. So there's, it's kind of an inclination that this is happening now.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of the seeds planted for, I think, discord among the Dominion forces with Weyoun, Dukat, Damar, and kind of what feels like maybe an uneasy alliance or absorption of Dominion rule of Cardassia?
I love that the seed is planted right now. The way the infighting with Weyoun, Dukat, and Damar is very interesting. Dukat is so excited to get Tarek Nor back, and he and Damar are like, oh, and we'll get Bajor. And Weyoun, like, cuts it down immediately. I mean, this is me paraphrasing, but he's like, you idiots, you're in the Dominion now. We signed a non-aggression treaty pact with Bajor. Like, Weyoun is in charge.
Yeah.
And Dukat and Damar kind of, like, give each other a knowing look at that point. Yeah. And it's very clear to me that Dukat is probably regretful that he's gotten in with these people because they are controlling his actions in a way that he does not like and is not used to. So I do feel like this is going to, I feel like this will, I mean, obviously I know what happens, but I do feel like this, like, is the beginning of, like, maybe a splinter between the Dominion and the Cardassians, or at least Dukat.
Yeah, like, I think it's definitely, and I mean, Weyoun is just, like, the king of, like, the cat and mouse game. And,
yes.
Like, even that scene earlier with Sisko where it's, like, they're both just doing platitudes, but they know within 5 minutes that there's going to be war.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the power struggle, right? Where it's like Dukat thinks he can pull Weyoun's strings, and Weyoun is like, no, 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 bitch, we pull your strings. Like, in the push and pull of that, right? It's fun to watch. Weyoun kind of reminds me a bit like a cat, right? Like, where he's playing with his, like, it's like it's the cat playing with the mouse, right? Right before it eats it. Like, it's playing with its dinner before it goes in for it, right? Like,
yeah. He is a real cat, Weyoun.
Yeah.
The Cardassians and the Dominion lose like 50 ships trying to take the station, which seems like a lot. I don't know how many they brought.
51. No. It was
probably 100 or something. I don't know. The Defiant almost doesn't get the mines deployed in time, but eventually the Rotaran comes and is able to, like, protect them enough for getting that done. Worf is going to be stationed on the Rotaran, not on the Defiant, which is interesting because the Defiant is where he lives up until now.
Yeah.
We get an interesting scene where Dax and Worf are saying goodbye to each other, and Dax agrees to marry him, and I do like them together, minus that one episode on Risa. But Dax has had literally nothing to do all season, so this just feels, like, completely out of left field to me. Like, she's not really had a lot of storyline, and I just feel like I almost forgot that Worf wanted to marry her. Like, it's been so long since we've talked about their relationship that it just feels like it's out of nowhere. But I guess it's just, like, season finale shit.
Yeah, and, like, lest we forget that, like, Worf has this whole thing where it's like, oh, we have really good sex, we need to get married now. Like, going back to when he hooked up with Kalar on TNG.
Yeah, I do think that his... Yeah, I do think his and Dax is... And I do think with Kalar, too. Like, I do think his relationship is deeper than just that. Like, than just
No, good sex. I know.
But it is very much, like...
He has this purity culture, like,
no, strength. I know, but I do hope that, like, Worf wants to marry her for the right reasons, not just because they banged.
Oh, I think he does, too. Yeah. I think he does, too. But it's just, you know, yeah. It's the, like, Worf is, like, the type of guy, I think, who won't admit it but falls very fast and, like, yeah. You know, you have sex for the first time and he wants to say I love you, but he's fighting it back because he knows it would be weird to say it one the first time.
Yeah.
<that's fair. laughs> Or something, right? Yeah, like
yeah. Sisko gives a little speech to everyone who's gonna stay on Deep Space Nine, basically like, hope to see you soon. Bye.
Bye, besties.
And when he arrives on the Defiant, Garak is there, who I didn't think about this prior to Garak being on the Defiant. Like, of course Garak wouldn't want to stay in Deep Space Nine. He is an enemy of Dukat, and so he is an enemy of the Dominion, and I believe that if he stayed there, he would get killed. So I'm glad Sisko is like, yeah, you can stay with us. and I'm sure he'll become a huge asset to them with his spy skills.
I mean, he'll probably be of more use to the crew of the Defiant than Jake would if he'd come.
Yeah. The episode ends, and, well, basically, with a few different things happening. The Defiant and the Rotaran cloak and leave the area. Excuse me. Kira and Odo stay behind, and they send a message to the Dominion, basically like, it's yours now, before they activate that program Sisko 197 and, like, sabotage all the major ops menus or whatever. There was a scene which I found hysterical where, like, Odo, Kira, and Quark, as head is like, Quark made up this title for himself on the fly. I'm 100% sure.
Association?
He's like, I'm head of the Deep Space Nine Merchant Guild or whatever. And I'm like, you literally just made that up. I mean, I think that it makes sense that he's there because he is someone I'm sure they did, like, look to him to deal with this because he's probably the closest to the people that were running Deep Space Nine of all the other, you know, he's the only merchant we really know. And so they kind of meet with Wayun and Dukat. I don't remember if Dumar was there also because I didn't rewatch this episode a second time. And, you know, Dukat's already calling it Tarak Nor, which is not surprising at all. And he's like, let me find my office. And Dukat goes into his office and all of Sisko's belongings are gone except for his prized baseball. And, like, even before they say it in the episode, we're all like, ooh, Sisko will return. He wouldn't just leave that baseball there. And then at the end of the episode...
Yeah, it's like the end title card in a James Bond movie.
Exactly.
Like, James Bond will return.
in whatever the name of the next episode title is. And then, as mentioned in the special effects section, the Rotaran and the Defiant decloak and join the Federation and then turn forward towards the Dominion on the offense. So that's the part where they were like, we had to rewrite the beginning of season six because they were supposed to just, like, go towards the fleet, not, like, join them and turn. It was... I don't think that it's as big of a deal as the writers think it is, honestly.
No, especially when there's going to be likely a time jump anyways, because that's how DS9 handles their season finales and season premieres. And, like, in fairness to, like, the special effects folks, it's an exciting scene.
It really
is. You're, like, ready to run through a wall, right? Because in the, like, when Sisko's like, bye, bestie, see you later, he also admits that, like, they got the minefield done. They're surrendering the station, and they didn't get any Federation Klingon backup because they had did a secret attack on some Dominion shipyards, which was a victory, right? So that was kind of happening in the background off screen, too. So it's just like, yeah, let's run through a wall. We'll get these guys. We'll get payback, you know? So.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Well, it's... I can't believe we only have two seasons of DS9 left.
I know. We only have 52 episodes left.
I was going to say, it's going to be 50-some episodes.
I only know that.
Like, we only have 20.
I only knew that quickly because there are 52 cards in a deck of cards. I just know that half a deck is 26 for some reason. And I'm like, Deep Space Nine has 26 episodes per season. Yes, I know how to do a dish simple addition, but I just meant, like, I knew it off the top of my head that it was 52.
I'm really excited to cover the premiere of season six because it does something really unique for Star Trek at the time.
Yep.
And, like, respectfully pretty unique for television at the time. And watching it now without that context, you're like, oh yeah, this is just modern TV, right? So
love it. That's great.
Lots of all killer, no filler coming up here pretty quick. Now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned in the context of Star Trek by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Also a possible reference to Alta from Altair IV in the MGM film Forbidden Planet. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
I am thirsting for Rom and Lita. I'm so happy they're finally married. But in general, it wasn't that thirsty of an episode.
No, the only people getting thirsty this episode were, you know, the Warhawks.
Yes.
Who were jonesing for
war. I was like, is Hillary Clinton
Dick
there?
Cheney, like, loves this episode.
Just imagine, like, Hillary Clinton watching this and being like, yeah, go to war.
Now it's time for the most Star Trek thing. My nominee for the most Star Trek thing of the episode we mentioned earlier was a reference in Star Trek that's feathered in to other media, this being the Casablanca reference or, like, the Wizard of Oz reference last week. Do you have a nominee for most Star Trek thing, Elise?
I don't really have a nominee except... Actually, I guess reusing battle scenes would probably be my most Star Trek thing.
Yeah, valid.
Yeah.
Valid. That was a really loud car outside. I wonder if that got picked up by the mic.
I didn't hear All right. So that's a plus.
All right. Well, Elise, in the meantime, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find links to my True Blood podcast, Fangbangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fangbangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. If you're from Canada, you can find links.
Nasty.
You can find links to my James Bond podcast, Pay Attention 007, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pay Attention 007 Pod or at moviejawn.com. That's JAWN.
You can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Matty Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pod Race. That's Pod Race with an S, not a Z or a Z. And you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.